I didn't realize I'd be this nervous in such an honoring moment, so thank you. I'd like to share today why I'm such a blessed man, and then I'd like to talk about feeding the world and how we've increased productivity, and then the need for more involvement in politically and in education. And we've talked about that many times in the past, so what can I say that'll make a difference, but I'd sure like to try here this morning. Why I'm a blessed man? I got many different aspects of that. First of all, I was born to parents in North Central Iowa who had eighth grade education and who were conservative, frugal, very productive, hardworking farmers. Secondly, I was blessed to work for Land O'Lakes during a 40-year period where we had tremendous growth in the food industry. And then third, I've had some great mentors, some great colleagues, and to be part of this technology that's come aboard this last 40 years. First of all, I'd like to thank NAMA. Thank NAMA for picking me as the Agribusiness Leader of the Year. That's a tremendous honor. I'd like to thank Land O'Lakes. And when you think of the organization Land O'Lakes, there's kind of three different parts to it, how I've been blessed. First of all, just to have the different people to work with. And I just recently retired here in March, and so that's what I miss the most is the people. Secondly is the travel. And I've got to travel a lot of different places, and so just coming here to Kansas City this week is one of them, and it just renews my enthusiasm for travel. And then the third one is just the learning I've had, and just tremendous opportunity, and I'll miss that a lot, intellectual stimulation, if you will, coming from being out and about with the people. We've talked about the employees and mentioned them, and Amy, your comments were very kind, but under the umbrella of Winfield Solutions, that's a three-year-old umbrella now that's putting crop protection and seed together, and the people I'd like to call out, first of all, are CEO Chris Polosinski, who nominated me for this award. He's got a board meeting today in Washington, D.C., working there. And then the gentleman who replaced me, Mike Vandelot, worked for me 17 years, and in the last year I had a chance, a year and a half, to work for him. And so that's been a real privilege. So Mike is now currently leading our seed part under Winfield. There's three individuals here today I'm going to recognize. First of all, we have Jack Carlson, who has been with us 13 years. He took our soybean business from 500,000 bags to 10,500 over that 13-year period. Josh Krenz, who's our brand manager. And our third one in is Robin Steele. And she's helped craft the message that I'm sharing here today. And she did all of the writing up of the nomination. So would you three folks please stand and again and give a round of appreciation to those three? Thank you, Jack, Josh, and Robin. The fourth person I want to call out is my first mentor. And I met Bob in 1968 in Okoboji, Iowa, as a rookie salesman. Bob was head of our seed business at that time, and they talked about a fledgling startup business. It truly was that in 1968, is Bob invested his time and energy and money to help build Research Seeds, which became the foundation of our forage business today. And so Bob helped me a lot over the years, and so I'm just real proud to have him here today. Bob, would you please stand? Let's give a round of appreciation to Bob Tettinger. Bob is now living in a retirement community over in Johnson County, so he and Marcy and Karen and I are going to go out for supper tonight and reminisce about the 40 years plus that we've been together. Amy mentioned the great partnerships, and that's one way that Land O'Lakes has had the opportunity to make the pie bigger. We started with Syngenta when the old legacy company, SIBA, putting their private label germplasm into Sunnix Land O'Lakes seed back in 1992. And then that became part of Novartis when NK and Syngenta and SIBA came together, and now today it's part of the legacy of the Syngenta company. We had our first research agreements with Monsanto in 1992. And then we had distribution agreements for Asgrow, soybeans, and DeKalb in 1999 and in 2000. And so that has become a very key partnership that's made the pie bigger for both, bringing those products into the co-op system. And then the third company on the screen there has been a very key part of our partnerships. We sold three corn production plants and two soybean plants to Remington Seeds. And they've been a wonderful partner over the years, producing high-quality seeds for us to sell under the Cropland Genetics brand. So those are some of the companies that I've really been blessed to work with and the people that have made those partnerships work. The cooperative system. My dad was on the board of the local co-op, my grandpa before that, and now today my brother is on the board there in, at New Co-op there in west central Iowa. But it's really been a privilege for me to work for the company that's owned by the customers we serve. And co-ops in north central United States were started for one of three reasons: to market milk, market grain, or supply petroleum. And so agronomy products and seed have been complementary to the cooperative system, and that's what's given us the reach, is because of those other things that co-ops do. So that's been a real blessing for us in the seed business. The biotech industry. I got my first exposure to biotech from DuPont in 1988 when they talked about high oil corn, and that product was pretty important to us there for a few years there in the mid-90s. But then we started inserting genes into alfalfa in partnership with Montana State University in 1992. And then we started some of the research agreements, as I mentioned, with Monsanto, and then started selling the first products of NK corn in 1996, and then 1997. It just grew from there. So biotech has certainly been a key part of our growth. And then lastly, I'm really blessed to have the family I do. You can see there on the screen our daughters Carrie and Suzanne, and our son-in-law Brandon, two young grandsons. I never aspired to be a grandpa, but now our six-year-old today, and the three-year-old there, Conrad and Bennett. And then I'd like to introduce my wife, Karen. Well, I've made the living. She's made life worth living. Give a round of appreciation to my wife, Karen, if you would, here. So you can see I've many, many ways that I've been a blessed man. Secondly, I'd like to share a little bit today about feeding the world. And you know, well, I've been blessed to be in, and we've all been blessed in this room to have plenty. There's people in the world who are actually going to bed tonight hungry. So that's a key obligation we have and an opportunity we have to feed the world. Here in the United States, we have about 50 million people who have had soup or will not know where their meals are going to come from next week. So we put that in the area of food insecure. And we're very affluent. Woodbury, Minnesota, where we have our church, our food shelf has just increased immensely the last couple years. And so we know that there's even people with both families, both members of the family, lose their job, how important the food shelf can be. This is a busy chart, but it also shows we had 840 million people hungry in 1990 in the world, at some level of hunger on that pendulum. And today we got over a billion, one in six, if you will, do not know where all of their food's going to come from or they're malnourished. So that's quite an obligation to feed the world. We've had demonstrations that in some cases have turned into riots. We had one in L.A. here, Food Versus Fuel, in February of 2008, those of you can remember that. Just this year in North Korea and in India, they've actually, demonstrations have turned into riots where people are wondering where they and do not have enough food. So hunger will possibly become even a more growing challenge. If we're going to increase the population here in the world from 6 billion in 40 years to 9 billion, and as the third world countries develop their diets, we need, it's projected, 70% more food. So again, great opportunity, great obligation. And if we're going to increase this food, where's the land going to come from? We have to have more productivity per acre. It's been said that of land available that has enough water to grow crops, there's really three places: Brazil, Congo, and Ukraine would have both good quality soil and enough water to grow crops. So water may be the limiting factor, if you will, and how much more food we can produce. My grandpa took care of himself, wife, seven kids, and a couple hired hands in 1930. That was the amount of food, a very self-sufficient north central Iowa farmer. My brother today on that same farm is feeding 155 people. If my nephew and his son choose to be farming 40 years from now, they'll have to take care of over 200 people in food supply. So you can see how that productivity has gone up and up and up over the years. Another way of looking at some of those same statistics is my grandpa was raising 20 bushels per acre corn as they picked it by hand there in 1930. Last year, my brother on his whole farm harvested 200 bushels per acre, and the U.S. average was 162. If you look at milk, my grandpa had 4,500 pounds of milk. Today, we're over 20,000 pounds. The ironic thing about that is if we'd take the same fuel efficiency and extend it for cars, today we'd have over 100 miles per gallon in our cars. So truly, farmers and we in agribusiness have increased productivity. Dr. Borlaug, who I respect immensely and who got the gold medal acceptance speech in 2007, he said that if we'd have kept the same productivity levels in 1950 that we had now in the year 2000, we'd have to increase our acreage by 3 billion. So his three key points he made in his message. The first two was we've done a tremendous job of increasing productivity, and we've done a tremendous job of improving sustainability. If we'd have brought all that marginal land in, think of the erosion we'd have. This chart describes what our efficiencies have been in producing food per unit or per bushel, gone up over since World War II, gone up 250%. So again, a tremendous productivity story we've got to share. So as we kind of put this whole productivity story together, we've got plenty of resources to do it. We may not have enough going forward, and we need to keep increasing productivity and sustainability to be sure we can get it done. So we do need to be very resourceful. Which leads me to my third conversation I want to have with you. And we've talked about this many times before, is how do we get agribusiness and farmers more actively involved in politics and in education of what we need to do to feed the world. As we said, we've got to support this activity of sound science and coexistence. What we mean by coexistence is that organic farmers and conventional farmers and farmers who plant the biotech seeds can all exist in that same market and need to produce the seeds in the same market. When we talk about our productivity going up, my brother certainly does less tillage than my dad did. He's certainly doing a much better job of saving the water and the soil moisture there, reducing erosion, and much less soil compaction. So that fits right into this increased sustainability. So as we look at what we've done to reduce crop protection products, reduce the fuel per acre, my dad was using 11 gallons of fuel to produce an acre of Iowa corn. My brother's now using 4. Looking at it the other way around, dad was producing 10 bushels per gallon of fuel. My brother's now producing 40 bushels per gallon of fuel. So you can see the tremendous productivity we've got increasing. And it's just reduced the carbon footprint tremendously, what Iowa agriculture, what the whole U.S. agriculture has done. The third point that Dr. Borlaug made a point of in his 2000 acceptance speech was, the pertinent question for today is, will farmers and ranchers be allowed to use the new technologies? And that's a very growing concern. As Lynn Henderson led a discussion this morning and talked about how bogged down approvals are in our USDA right now, we as a whole industry need to be more united about that. We can tell the story of increased productivity, reduced crop protection, more friendly crop protection products, more conservation tillage, my brothers and others using more filter strips to reduce runoff, and the reduced fuel per acre. But we still have more regulation. And that's what's that balance in that? And I wanted to share our personal story that we've had at Land O'Lakes and Forage Genetics about Roundup Ready alfalfa. We started researching that and inserting genes in partnership with Montana State University back in 1992. In the mid-90s, we rented genes, Roundup Ready gene to be in particular from Monsanto, and started inserting those into alfalfa. And then plants lived and died when we sprayed them with Roundup. And then in 2005, USDA approved us selling Roundup Ready alfalfa for the first time. Farmers in 2006, dairy farmers, showed that they got over $100 per acre in increased productivity when they sprayed their alfalfa with Roundup and just less weeds and better production of more protein per acre. Then the Center for Food Safety in 2006 sued USDA, saying they had not looked out for all economic stakeholders in the industry, mainly organic farmers. And so we sell organic seed. It's about 1% of our sales. But the other 99%, many of them would like to use the biotech. So in March of 2007, a judge put a stop sale on Roundup Ready alfalfa. This judge was from the 9th District Circuit in California, where they do not raise a lot of alfalfa, I can assure you. 37 months later, we missed planting seasons of spring 07, 08, 09, and 10. We're still going through this environmental impact statement. And USDA said they could have it back on the market in 2 years. Now we're at 37 months, and we're still going through that process of getting the public comments recorded and responded to. And if they don't go faster, we're not going to have it on the market for this fall. So again, how can farmers choose to plant a technology that might make them $100 an acre more if it's not getting through our registration process? The irony of it is we get more and more efficient. We have less and less farmers involved in agriculture, and now less than 2% of our population is actively involved in the production side of it. So kind of as we wrap this up, what do we need to do? I think there's four simple messages we in the communications community for agribusiness need to talk about. One is coexistence. Yes, if farmers want to plant organics and grow them, they can. If they want to do conventional seeds and do it the conventional way, they can. Or if they want to go biotech, they can. Let the market decide. Yes, we need to have increased productivity to feed the world, and biotechnology will be part of that. Yes, we need to have continued sustainability. Nobody looks out for his soil more than my brother does because he wants to pass it on to his son and his grandson. So I just believe farmers can and should. Now, they're not all looking out for sustainability, but certainly the most of them are. And then we as an agribusiness community need to have sound science. And that's important that all of the four of these things work together. So that's the simple message. In conclusion, we need to drive the advance of productivity however we can. We need to speak up for it and defend it. I'm much more of a defender today than I was 3-4 years ago. We need to preserve the right for farmers to choose what these technologies that they could plant or not plant on their farm. Internationally, we need to build our exports where that helps our U.S. farmers. And in some cases, third world countries, we need to help them with our insights and our technologies and build their infrastructure so they can do more to feed themselves. We need to feed the world. The stakes are high. It's an obligation. It's an opportunity. I know we've talked about it many times before, but in this auditorium, there's a lot of reach. And so I want to encourage you to keep talking about how we can be more involved appropriately in getting this done right. In conclusion, again, I want to thank you for your time and attention. Thank you for selecting me for this honor. And thank you for whatever you're going to do to help further the future of agribusiness and production agriculture. Thanks.